This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson. Whether you are a writer, illustrator, or inventor, you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. The attorneys at Larson & Larson can help you. For a free consultation, call 727-546-0660. They're my lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, this is an exciting program. I have on today the dynamic duo of crime writers, the Nick and Nora Charles of thrillers, Marsha Muller and Bill Pronzini. Hi, are you there?
We're here.
We're here.
Oh, fantastic. This is amazing. I'm so thrilled to talk to you both. Well, of course, you
thanks
are.
Thanks for having us on.
Oh, well, it's a thrill. You are, of course, Mystery Writer of America, Grand Masters, both of you, which is so nice. It would be terrible if just one of you were. but you are both so amazing. And it's so much to talk to you about between the books that you write separately, and then, of course, your fantastic series, the Carpenter and Quincannon stories, the historical mysteries, which are set in San Francisco. And we'll talk about that. But I want to first just to say to Marsha, I know that you are a Michigander.
Yes, I am.
And so am I.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was raised in the I was born in the Upper Peninsula, but I was raised in Highland Park, Michigan.
Very close to where I was raised.
I know. And so I think we saw many of the same places in those days when Woodward Avenue was still special, and Detroit Museum of Art and all of that. So I always think about you when I'm reading one of your books, because I love to read something from a fellow Michigander. So it's really great. And of course, you're also University of Michigan, so you're Go Blue, right?
That's right.
Well, I spoke not too long ago to Carolyn Hart, and she is such a big fan of yours. Of course, she's a grandmaster, and she talks about how very, very important you are to the entire crime and mystery series of women writers that came about because so much that you did to sort of break into the market. You really came out with the first sort of hard-boiled type of detective, and you led the way, and with your Sharon McCone series.
Yes, although I wouldn't call them hard-boiled. I think they're medium-boiled.
Well, not quite as hard as some of them, but it was certainly a different way for women to be portrayed in mystery stories.
Yes. The funny thing was, right after I published the first book, I kept meeting actual female private eyes. And it just really surprised me that there were so many out there.
But it was just you created this from your mind, and of course you have a fantastic, it's an interesting premise. Tell us a little, Will, before you talk about the books that you guys write together, let's talk about your separate books. So this, how many Sharon McCone books have you written now?
I'm not even sure.
Well, a lot. A lot.
I think it's about 35.
Yeah, I think so.
Right in the middle of one now.
You're in the middle of one now. So, it's a wonderful series, and you've just well, you've been getting better all along, you know, and it's hard to believe that the first one was really quite long ago now, 1976 or 77, something like that. And did that, when that came out, what was the reception at the time?
It was quite good. And, you know, it was a book club selection, paperback, and all that. But the funny thing was then I could not get another word published for 4 years.
Wow. Oh, I don't think most people know that.
Probably not. There's a long gap between Edwin of the Iron Shoes and Ask the Cards a Question.
Which, by the way, Edwin of the Iron Shoes, I love that name. And, of course, it refers to an object d'art or whatever in an antique store. And it was a very catchy name. But I understand a certain person didn't get it right when he first introduced this book.
Yes, that's the guilty part. He said Edgar of the Iron Shoes, which made it sound like I was very confident this book was going to be great.
Well, I was confident. I thought it was going to win.
Oh, and so that was
first novel, and it didn't.
So that was your introduction to Bill. That he,
yes, it was.
He got the name of your book wrong. Well, I guess eventually you forgave him, and you two got together.
Yes, I did forgive him.
You did. You've become such a major team, and it's amazing. I mean, you write your books separately, then you write the series together, and I assume it's a lot of fun because I just reading them, I feel sort of the fun in the books of taking this historical what the setting, of course. Let's talk a little bit. Who I know it was Bill who came up with the original idea for the Carpenter and Quincannon stories, right?
Right,
that's correct.
And tell us about that, Bill, and then how did Marcia get involved in it?
The series began with a novel called Quincannon in 1984, I think, and it was supposed to be a one-shot book. And then I decided that the characters were, if I could bring the characters together in the same milieu, she was in Denver, Sabina Carpenter was in Denver working for the Pinkerton Agency initially, and then I had her move to San Francisco and join Quincannon in their own agency together. And so I began to write a number of short stories featuring the characters. And one day, Marcia and I were talking, and we thought it might be fun if we did a short story where she wrote the Sabina Carpenter scenes and I wrote the Quincannon scenes. So we tried it, and it worked really well. So that's how we got into, then we thought we'd try a novel, and that's how we got into doing the series.
Well, it's a perfect setting. They're back in sort of the end of the 1800s in San Francisco, which is such a rich environment for so many mysteries.
The fun part of it is doing the research. It's endlessly fascinating. The 1890s in San Francisco and the Bay Area were just full of rich story material. So it's been fun researching as well as writing the books.
And so, Marcia, when you got involved and you just picked right up there with Sabina's, you capture her voice and her style and just jumped right in there.
Yeah, she was very easy to write. You know, I'd been reading what Bill wrote about her all along, and I could just sort of step into the character's mind.
And you do. It's they read so beautifully together. The whole series works so nicely. Which was book that just came out? I'm sorry.
The Plague of Thieves.
Oh, The Plague of Thieves. That's one where it has something to do with Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Sherlock Holmes is a recurring character in the first four books.
Exactly.
But he's a bogus Sherlock Holmes.
Exactly.
Not really Sherlock.
That's what we were going to say, a bogus Sherlock Holmes drifting in and out of there. Now, when you do the research, you go to all these locations that you write about that are still there. You know, it's amazing. I was in San Francisco recently. How many places you can go to that are sort of still there, you know, from... not quite 100 years ago, but it's amazing.
There are quite a few, and we do a lot of, we've always done a lot of on-the-spot research for our books, both that series and our individual series.
When you write, do you each write, like, how do you write, how do you do this? You write a chapter back and forth? How does it work when you're working together on these books?
What we generally do is sit down and talk about the book and what we want to do with it, and then plot out a few chapters and go away from each other and write, and then exchange them. And of course, the plot keeps shifting and surprises occur to us.
Yeah, we're sort of seat-of-the-pants writers. Some writers can envision an entire book when they begin. We can't. We're character-driven writers, so we have to just let the characters take over and see where it goes. So we start out with a basic premise and then just wing it.
That's fun. That must be fun.
Yeah. You can write yourself into a corner, though, which we've done a few times.
But, there are authors who outline every single thing down to the end, practically. And it is fun to have the characters take on a life of their own, and as you do your research, to expand their horizons.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Now, of course, Bill, you're famous for another series, your own series, and I'm going to have on my program in a few weeks, Larry Block.
Oh, Larry, he's a tremendous writer.
He is, and he, of course, another grandmaster, but he always talks about that your Nameless series, in which the detective is Nameless, is one of the best of all.
That's very nice of him. Peer praise is the best possible kind you can get. Yeah, the Nameless series, it's the longest-running Private Eye series still being published. The first short story was 1967, the first novel, 1971. So it's been almost 50 years.
You know, and when you did this, when it was, again, an unusual premise. It's, you wrote it and... did you know it was going to be a series? I mean, did you plan it out that far in advance, or you thought it was going to be one-off?
Oh, no. I'd hoped that there would be more than one, but I never envisioned that it would be, that would last as long as it has. And also, the character did not start out to be Nameless. I couldn't think of a name for him when I wrote the first short story, and I still couldn't think of a name for him when I wrote the first book. And my editor at that time said, if you want to make this into a series, you're going to have to name the character. And I said to her, I can't think of a name. If you can come up with one that satisfies both of us, that'll be his name. And she couldn't think of one either. So she just said, let's call him the Nameless Detective. And that's how he got to be the Nameless Detective.
And it's worked.
It's worked great.
Well, tell us a little bit about him, because he's fascinating. He's a fascinating idea of a detective. Not quite the same as every other detective.
Well, I hope not. I tried to do something different with the series. The series is as much an ongoing biography of a man who happens to be a detective as it is a detective series, because I spend a lot of time, as does Marcia and hers, on the personal aspects of his life as well as his career and all the changes that he goes through and the that type of thing. I also try to make him fallible. He's not one of these superhero types.
And one of his endearing qualities is that he collects books.
Collects pulp magazines, as do
yeah.
I.
Yeah. You have quite a collection?
I do. If not as large as his. He's got a bigger one than I have. I'm sort of jealous.
And being a book collector myself, I know what it is when we start collecting, we can't stop.
No, it's an addiction.
When you did Nameless, it's like 40 years, right? Is it 40 years?
It's close to 50.
Oh my goodness, 50 years! Wow, and the as exactly what you said, that you followed him through all sorts of events, life-changing events. And yet the stories continue to be fresh, and I don't think you change up sort of the storyline, so it's not always the same style, I think.
That's what keeps me interested. If I had to write the same book over and over, this series would not have lasted as long as it has. I like to try different things. Sometimes, different formats, different approaches, different storylines, and sometimes it works. And sometimes it doesn't, but at least it helps keep me fresh, and I think it keeps the series fresh, doing something different.
And when you come out with the story, an idea for one of these stories, how long does it take you to write one of these books? How long do you work?
It depends on the story. Some Nameless books have taken as long as 6 months. Most of them take 3 to 4. I know the characters so well, and the subsidiary characters, his partner Tamara, and his main operative in the agency, Jake Runyon. I know those characters so well that I can. I've gotten to the point now where I can write the books fairly quickly. Although I do a lot of revision, as does Marcia.
When you go around to writers' events, they're always asking you, well, of course, eventually a name came, but we're not going to, we don't have to say what it is if you don't want, because eventually I think a name came up for Nameless, but it's a wonderful concept. And, of course, it's told in the first person, and it's a beautiful series.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Now, Marcia, when, of course, you had done the McCone series, how many books have you done? Well, we just talked about how many books you've done, but how have you also kept up with the series?
I keep changing her situation whenever I start feeling stale about it. I just have something awful happen to her, actually.
Well, you also had her find out that she was a full-blooded Shoshone Indian.
Yeah.
Well, that was interesting. Where did you get that idea from? It just came.
I think it was built into the series all the time, and I just wasn't looking for it or at it, but it just came to me suddenly that there had been a secret past in her life that her parents had been withholding from her, and I had done the Indian part of it. Just, it's a good way to describe a person, but then I started speculating on why is she so different from her brothers and sisters, and just naturally led to that.
Well, it's interesting that both of you have this ability in your series to grow and to change the format, so they're not predictable. Each time you read one of your books, it is different, and I think that's why you've been such a tremendous success over the years. Now, when you do your research, do you do it? Have you traveled to some interesting places to do research?
Oh, yeah. To Hawaii, all over California. In fact, we're getting kind of worried that we're using up California between the two of us.
Yeah, we pretty much divided up the entire northern part of the state for scene settings.
And when, well, maybe you have to maybe do one in Michigan. We have to take him over to, we're going to take him over to Detroit. I've always wanted somebody to do a murder mystery at the Detroit Institute of Art.
Just that one.
At the Institute of Art there. That would be fantastic.
Oh, I remember that place. It's lovely.
Do you? Oh, it's something special. When, for anyone who has ever been to Detroit, the Institute of Art is quite amazing and something very, very special. When do you like to do writers events? Do you still do writers events and go to?
Not so many in recent years. It's just, we've been doing it for so long.
So yeah, exactly. What's I don't want to ask what's your advice to writers, because when you're so, what you've done over the years, it's sheer determination. But one has to look at writing as not just an art. There's also the business aspect of it. You have to be well organized and really put your time into writing.
Oh yes, you really need discipline to sit down every day and face that blank. Well, now it's a screen. It used to be a page. But
we've always said that the only way to learn how to write is to write, even if you only write a page a day. If you wrote a page a day, you'd have a novel in a year or less than a year. So if you, we've always said to beginning writers, if you want to write, if you're serious about writing, you have to write a page a day. And that's nothing. A page is only a couple of hundred words.
Well, that's what I've been telling people too. And so it's the same thing. But I want to talk about when I have to take a commercial break, but when I come back, I want to talk specifically about the writers who have influenced you and some of the writers that you have influenced, and also a little bit more about the Mystery Writers of America.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guests, Marsha Muller and Bill Pronzini, who are both grandmasters of the Mystery Writer of America's Association. Tell me, Bill, I know that you've been involved with Mystery Writers of America for a long time.
67, and I was the chapter vice president, Northern California chapter vice president, a couple of times.
Well,
in fact, that's how Marsha and I met, at a chapter meeting of MWA.
Well, and it's a great organization for writers who are involved in mysteries and thrillers to get involved with. There are many, of course, they do many awards, and of course, both of you are in that grandmaster category, which so many fantastic writers have been in, from Alfred Hitchcock and Graham Greene and who else? Ed McBain
and Ross McDonald and Margaret Millar.
Exactly, and all of these people, and of course you both of you are there. Bill, I think you were in
2008,
and Marsha before a few years before that. So it's such a great honor, and for the both of you, and it's wonderful. I have met many young mystery writers, and they look up to you guys. They look at your work, and it's so wonderful that all of this is now available online. And it's easier to, a few years before the internet started, it would be difficult to get some of your past books.
But, oh, yes, it would. Yeah.
You know, you
the early books from both of us had very small printings. And so the e-book revolution has helped us find a lot of new readers.
Yeah, that is true. Because when these books went out of print, and unless you were a collector or hung around secondhand stores, it was the only way to find these books. And now, with this fantastic ability to go back and read once you find a series, to go back and read from the beginning if you want. And I think most of your books are available online now, and.
I think all of our books are available online now. All of our out-of-print books
have been reissued and are online. So it's fantastic to do that. And I think it's a very it's a learning experience for young writers to go back and sort of to see what you did in the beginning and to follow it along. And it's an amazing thing. And with Mystery Writers of America, they also offer quite a few other awards and openings for young writers to get involved and to participate in just becoming a part of the whole mystery writer community, which is it's so nice to see how all of you help each other. I know, like, Larry Block says so many great things about you, and Carolyn Hart, of course. I think she's like one of the most delightful writers, because in all of her books, she always talks about other mystery writers.
Yes, she does.
Isn't that
always a surprise?
It's so sweet, and it's so sweet of her to do that, because I think many times she has brought readers to writers that might never a reader might not have found, but when she mentions them in her books, people go and look them up, and so it's a fantastic.
We've done the same things in our books. Some of the Sharon McCone books mentions Nameless, and vice versa. I mentioned Sharon McCone. trying to get a little publicity for each of us.
Well, that's nice. I mean, that's part of the community of trying to encourage each other as much as to bring more to the public. I love that attitude. And
it's nice to know that we can inspire or help inspire new writers. It's very satisfactory.
And
satisfying, excuse me.
Yeah, no, it is. And I was at a writers' meeting and they asked me, when I go to these writers' meetings, who should you read? And I say, read the best. If you're going to read the best ones. Go exactly to the grandmasters, and you will see the development, and you will see what fine writing really is. And so I'm very, very happy always to recommend to people to go to this Mystery Writer of America's website, and then, of course, to go to the list of all of you grandmasters. And it's pretty amazing the kind of books that one can find just from among you.
Very true.
When you are... nowadays the reader, I think readers are, there are a lot of people reading. People think, they're not reading, but there are a lot of people out there who are reading. And there's been a big surge in people going online, finding books and looking for books. And I think readers, just like the writers, but the readers like to know a little bit more about the writers. And they like to know, now, of course, you don't attend as many readers' events as in the past, because nowadays when you go to readers' events, they spend half the time doing selfies. I went to a readers' event, and it was like, and I felt like the stupidest person in the room, because I was like the only one who didn't have a selfie stick. I wasn't there to get pictures of myself with anybody, but they just love it. And I mean, I think it's fantastic. I think, because what happens when a reader gets a picture with an author, they show it to everybody.
Yes.
And they send it on in social media. They send it on Facebook, and they send it on Twitter, and they do all of this. And that just brings more readers to that author.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it does.
So I think it's a wonderful thing to have this social media ability now, and to get the authors' names out there. Now, what's something not about writing that you can tell the readers about? What's something that you guys like to do besides writing? Or are you the prolific number of books that you guys come out with, you like that? Do you ever stop writing?
Well, let's see. We watch a lot of old films on TV.
Oh yeah, we're old film junkies.
And we have a huge library of videos and DVDs.
We also collect. I collect books. This house is creaking with books. There's probably enough here to open a used bookstore. I've been collecting for 45 years.
Yes. Well, my husband has many times said to me that he kept saying for years and years, he said, why do you bring? And we moved from place to place. So we moved a lot of places, and every place we went, I schlepped these books. And the last time we made a big move was from Texas to Florida, and we had a whole U-Haul truck just full of boxes of books, thousands of books. And he kept saying, why? And then it wasn't until a year ago when I started this program, he said, oh, finally, I have my answer. I'll never ask that question again, because, I have also a couple thousand books, and, they're all over the place. I'm trying to be very innovative about where I can stash books, because of course, now since I started this show, I have publicists send me like four or five books a week, which which doesn't help. So, but I've got books under the bathroom counters in plastic boxes. I have, but you know, I know where everything is actually. And so that's the nice thing. I know, you know, if I have to find a book, I can go and find it. And, you know, what can you do when you love books? You love books.
You do. And it's the books themselves. I mean, there's nothing wrong with e-books, but we're both so old-fashioned. I want a paper and ink book to read. I like holding books in my hands. I like sniffing the pages. And it's just, to me, a better reading experience.
Well, it is to me, too. But it's funny, you know, when the Harry Potter books came out, when they first came out, and people said, oh, well, the kids aren't, you know, kids don't read books anymore. But J.K. Rowling proved them all wrong, because she could write the thickest books, and these kids, you go around and you see the kids with these enormous books, and they wouldn't put it down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very encouraging. As a matter of fact, I've been interviewing quite a few people who are writing young adult fiction, steampunk fiction, in, you know, whether it's zombie fiction, but and mysteries all sort of blended in together. And it's amazing the number of young people who are reading real books. I mean, they all have their Kindles and their Fires and whatever, but they still do like that feeling. And I know, like, my boys, now they're a little older, they're in university, but they still treasure their Harry Potter books. I mean, I couldn't move those books from, they're on their shelf still. And, you know, they just love having the idea that their books are there. And of course, we went through also all the Hardy Boys and all of those Tom Swift years too.
Oh yeah.
So
that's very encouraging that young people are reading again. Seemed like there was a time there when they weren't.
Yeah,
they're all on social media.
Yeah, there was. I think there was that time, but I think more and more, and as I've had the result from the young adult fiction writers, who are again what they're doing, and this is again very clever now, doing these social media events where they go out and meet the fans. And do these selfies, and once they, you sort of hook a reader onto having this personal connection with the writer, I think it helps a lot.
Oh, it does. Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, once you've met a writer and you know something about them, or you've listened to them like on the radio, it makes them more real, and so then I think it draws in the reader, which is what we're looking for. And I know what I'm aiming for here is that I want people to find books that maybe not haven't been just released. I don't always interview, of course, with you. I could interview you any time of the year, any month of the year. You probably have a book coming out, you know. But I do interview a lot of people whose book came out like 2 years ago or 3 years ago. I don't care, because the book is valuable, and the writer, and it's still available. And if it's, as long as it's available, nowadays, a writer never has to go out of fashion.
No, not with the ebook craze. You know, they're on there forever,
and which is a very satisfying thought, really, because there was a period that, well, you know, there's still some libraries. It drives me crazy when a library gets rid of books. I have no, I can't grasp it. I was involved one time at Rice University Library in Houston, and they did what they culled their books. They just took their books. They went through all the books and they said, oh, well, nobody's read this since 19 whatever, and they just took them all out. And I thought, what? Are you crazy? I mean,
that happens all over the place. It happens out here as well.
It makes me crazy. I cannot wrap my head around anybody who would do that. I mean, to me,
no.
You add to them. You never take them away. So that's why I'm saying it's so nice if the public gets to know you a little bit better. I think it's delightful that you are, you know, I know that I'm not the first one to call you the Nick and Nora Charles of writers, but it's a nice idea for readers to have in their mind, and that when they are looking for a series to go to your, you know, the series that you guys do together, which again, there is a great deal of interest in historical fiction nowadays. I think that's why steampunk, for example, is popular, because it takes it back to a different era, and and it's sort of pleasurable to think of people in different costume, different style of clothing, and different environments, and
it also gives people a sense of history. There's a dearth of that these days in a lot of places. People have no sense of history, but by reading fiction, you can get that sense. And it might lead a reader to investigate other books on, you know, set at the same time.
I think that's exactly what happens, and that's of course in your case. You also wrote. I know you've done some Western books, and that also I think people might find very enjoyable. I haven't read any of the Western books.
The Westerns are generally they were published as Westerns, but they're essentially crime novels. They're mysteries
set in the Old West. And there is a sort of growing interest in books set in the West. And I was just talking to C.J. Boxen, who all of his books are set in Wyoming. And there's that interest in sort of the West, the wild, the open sky country type of books. And your books are all available. I know that Bill, you have a book coming out in May?
In May 17th, it's a nameless detective book. It's called Zigzag. It's a collection of two original novellas and a couple of short stories.
And are you working on another big one?
I just finished the Nameless novel for 2017 next year, and Marcia and I just delivered the next Carpenter and Quincannon, which will be published in January. It's called The Dangerous Ladies Affair.
And, Marcia, you have a single book coming out, too, in the near future?
It's coming out in July, and it's to Sharon McCone. I was trying to remember the title.
And you guys,
but he always knows.
Oh, thank you.
Because somebody does always know.
That's true. And I don't have to ask you, after all of these years, the process of editing of, but it's still wonderful that when you send a book out and you know it's being edited and it's on its way, it's an exciting feeling.
Well, we've always functioned as each other's in-house editor. We read each other's manuscripts in progress and make comments and suggestions, and so that when the finished manuscript leaves the house, it's usually pretty clean and doesn't require a lot of input from our New York editors.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you're a couple who obviously love to work together and love each other and bring this joy of writing into your work. And I'm just so thrilled that I got to talk to you today. And again, I wanted to just ask you each, so that we can people can think about it. Which are the writers that influenced each of you the most? Who do you think?
I would say probably Raymond Chandler, Ross Macdonald. they introduced me to the Private Eye novel, and, you know, then I just started reading everybody.
For me, the writer that had, well, there are a couple of writers who had a strong influence on me, with Chandler and Hammett, of course, early on. But Ed McBain, Evan Hunter, I learned how to write dialogue. I learned a lot of things from reading his work. He's always been right at the top of my list. There are quite a few others. I could name a bunch of others, but those are the major influences.
Okay, well, thank you, and I'm going to encourage. Now, you both have separate websites?
No. I have a website, but I'm in the process of setting up something different with my publisher, and that should be up and going in, I think they said, April.
And, Bill, you have a website.
No, I don't, actually. No,
you don't have a website?
No, I've never gotten into that.
Well, that's shocking.
I tend to be, I don't want to say reclusive, but I've just never gotten into social media or any of that kind of thing.
Well,
nothing against it. It's just that it's not me.
It it takes time.
It does. Marcia also has a Facebook page.
So, but people can find all of your work on Amazon and Barnes and Noble.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that I will, and I have done it before. I've recommended your writing, as I said, most all the Grandmaster writing to the writing groups that I meet, because it's wonderful to learn from a master, and you guys certainly are. And I want to thank you both for being on today. I think that you're a fantastic, fantastic duo, and your writing's amazing. And I think it will be inspirational to a lot of young writers to read your work. And you know, being here in Florida, where we have a lot of people here laying around the pool and sitting on the beach. For those ones, they can download straight to their Kindle and Fire and Nook, and just sit there and have a wonderful afternoon and reading and enjoying Marcia Muller and Bill Pronzini's books. And just, again, thank you both for coming on. And I will look forward to, and I will announce when your new books come out, I will make sure that I announce them to my listeners.
Well, thanks very much, Patsy.
Thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, it's a joy to talk to you both. So enjoy your day, and enjoy, I'm sure you will be writing, because it's still early over there in California.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Thanks for getting up so early. Okay?
Again, our pleasure.
Okay. All the best.
All the best. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Whoa. Now, anybody who, of course, is a writer is aware of the Mystery Writer of America website, and I would suggest that if you are involved in mysteries, you go there and look at their site, and just look at this list of amazing writers. And if you're going to be writing mysteries, you have to learn from the very best, and whether it's cozy mysteries like Carolyn Hart, or a little bit harder mysteries like Bill Pronzini or Marcia's, you will really enjoy reading these authors. So do go to that website, and it's just called Mystery Writers of America. And meanwhile, if you're a writer or an illustrator, one of the things that you need to do is to protect yourself. So if you have a legal question, send it to me. I'm going to have on my program this month Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. He will answer your questions. So email me your legal questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com. And Bill will answer your questions. And he's also going to, each month, he's going to talk about a particular topic that's relevant to writers. And it is so important if you're writing a story that you want to make sure that your characters and that your vision is protected. And particularly if you're going to be merchandising and you hope to merchandise things, whether it's T-shirts or whatever, make sure that you are protected. And you can call Bill Larson at Larson Larson, and they will give you a free consultation. But if you just have a question you want to know something about, send it to me, and I will ask him to answer it when he comes. Now, also, if you're a professional writer, if you've done nonfiction writing, or if you hope to become one, if you want to start submitting your work to magazines or to other organizations, then I suggest that you join the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild. It's a great group. They meet on the fourth Monday at 1 p.m. at Panera's on Starkey Road. It's a wonderful group. You'll love. They get together, they talk about different subjects to do with writing. You always learn something at these meetings, and they're just fun. And you can find more information about them at Bay Area Professional Writers Guild website. It's www.bapwg.org. And as I said, it's just the fourth Monday. You don't have to do anything special. Just pop in and join us there. I'm going to be there this month and practically every month, and it's just a great experience. Now, coming up on March 19th, there's going to be a Tampa Literary Authors Meetup, and that's going to be taking place in Barnes & Noble on Dale Mayberry. Did I say Dale Mayberry? Why, every time I say that, it's Dale Mabry, and I always think of Opie and... I don't know why I say that, but that's what I say. I think maybe my kids started me on that. We used to go up there to a violin teacher, and so I think they were saying it, and I've never been able to get over it. But there's a Barnes & Noble there, and they have a meetup on the 19th at 7 p.m. And it's, again, this is for unpublished authors and of just general fiction, any type of fiction, from mysteries to whatever you're writing. You can get together with this group, and I think you will really enjoy it. And also coming up this weekend on Friday and Saturday night, there's live music at the Miami Avenue Wine Bar and in Indian Rocks Beach. It's a fantastic place, beautiful, nice and large. They have a dance floor. They can fit 70 people, and it's just such a lovely atmosphere. Great wines, and that's Miami Avenue Wine Bar in Indian Rocks Beach. And so this is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. And meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it, and have a great week. Okay, bye.